Welcome to Searchlight, a survey through Scripture with Pastor John Corson. It is our desire to bring you a systematic study of the entire Bible, chapter by chapter, book by book. We have spent several Searchlight programs looking at the life and story of Gideon. It is a fascinating story, which has many practical lessons for us. Before we leave Gideon's story, John has one more thing that he wants to share with us. It's about how God sees Gideon and several other guys in the book of Judges. God's perspective on these guys is startling and encouraging to us. Here now is Pastor John.
This last Wednesday night, in our Through the Bible study, we finished looking at and studying through the life of Gideon. Gideon, a very ordinary guy, used in a most extraordinary way. Gideon was a guy like you and me. His faith was shaky and sometimes faulty. You know the story. Here he is, hiding away from the marauding Midianites one day, and the Lord comes to him and says, "Gideon, the Lord is with you, mighty man of valor." Here's Gideon, hiding away, filled with fear and terror, when the Lord comes to him that day and says, "Gideon, the Lord is with you, mighty man of valor, and you are going to be the guy that is used to set the people of Israel free from the Midianites who were terrorizing the people constantly." "Me?" Gideon says. "Me? I'm the least in my family. And my family is the least in this tribe. Hey, you must have made some kind of mistake, Lord. I'm at the bottom of the heap, the bottom of the barrel. You want to use me? How can I believe you, Lord? How can I believe this?" And then the Lord took the staff in his hand and touched the meal that they were sharing, and boom, it ignited on fire. and disappeared and burned away. You would think that Gideon would say, "Got it. It is you, and it's real clear that I'm to be the guy that you use to set your people free." But Gideon continued to have faulty, faltering faith and doubts and fears. He would say on another day, "Lord, if it really is you, give me a sign." I mean, already the Lord appears to him. Already a fire ignites miraculously before him. And now the Lord says once more, Gideon says once more, "Hey, I need to really know. So I'll tell you what. I'm going to lay this fleece out here, this wool, this fleece. And Lord, when I wake up in the morning, if it's really you who's calling me, then have that fleece be soaked with water, but the ground all around be as dry as a bone." And Gideon went to sleep that night, woke up the next morning, he saw the fleece, and it was soaked with water. The dew soaked it completely, through and through. But the ground all around was as dry as a bone, just like Gideon asked. The sign that he needed to see, it came to pass very, very clearly. Well, Gideon says, now, Lord, I'm still not sure about this. So I'm going to go to sleep again tonight. And when I wake up, Lord, if this really is you, if you really want me to do this, then have the ground be all wet and the fleece be as dry as a bone. The next morning, again, you know the story. He got up and the ground was soaking, but the fleece was dry as a bone. I mean, you look at Gideon and you say, man, hasn't the Lord made it exceedingly clear that Gideon, he's calling you to do something extraordinary? What will it take to get through to you? But it still wasn't enough. The Lord saw that Gideon's heart was still filled with fear and his mind was haunted by doubts. Okay, Gideon, the Lord said, tonight, I know where you're at. So tonight, you and your servant sneak into the camp of the Midianites. And there you will hear and you will know that I truly have called you and that I'm in control. So that night, Gideon and his servants sneak into the camp of the Midianites, and they overhear a couple of Midianites talking by the campfire. And one Midianite said to the other Midianite, man, I had a dream last night. This loaf of barley bread came rolling down the hill and crashed into my tent and knocked it to the ground. What does that mean? And the Midianite who was listening said to the Midianite who was telling that dream, oh, here's what it means. We're going to get steamrolled by a guy named Gideon who's going to lead the men of Israel into battle. Well, Gideon heard those two talking in that way. And man, a smile must have broke out on his face. And finally he said, okay, let's go. And the rest, of course, is history. Gideon led 300 men against 135,000 Midianites into a miraculous, glorious victory. Now, we looked at the story, we've talked about it, we've meditated on it, we've taken teachings from it. But here's what I want you to see this morning, and I won't keep you a long time, I guarantee. But be that as it may, here's what intrigues me in our text today. Look at Hebrews chapter 11. Hebrews chapter 11 is the hall of faith. Selected individuals, only a handful, selected to be in this hall of faith of Hebrews chapter 11. Most of you are familiar with this chapter. It defines what faith is, and then it gives examples of how faith works. And here in Hebrews chapter 11, as it comes to verse 32, the writer, who I believe was the Apostle Paul, says to me and you, what more shall I say? Talking about the great acts of faith and the great men and women who moved in the arena of faith. What more shall I say? For time would fail me to tell of Gideon. Huh? Gideon is one of the few that makes it into the hall of faith. This guy who kept on doubting you, Lord. This guy who needed sign after sign after sign when you made it so clear from the very get-go that you were calling him. And yet he vacillated back and forth, and his mind was filled with doubts and his heart with confusion. And yet, check this out. Here he is, Gideon, in the hall of faith. And not just Gideon, but look at the next name, Barak. Now, remember Barak? He was the guy earlier in Judges. We talked about him, 4 weeks ago. He was the guy who was the general of the Israelite army who would not go into battle against Israel's enemies unless Deborah, a woman, went with him. He was sort of hiding behind her skirts, you see. He wanted to stay at camp. He wanted to stay in the barrack. That's why his name is Barak. No, not really. But Barak, you see, I read his story and I go, huh? He is in the hall of faith too? This guy that was reluctant to go into battle, oh, he finally did when Deborah agreed to go and sort of lead the army. He would go with her, you see. But in my thinking, I would say Gideon, the guy that kept doubting, and Barak, the guy who wouldn't go unless a woman led the way. And then the next name here in verse 32, we'll read about him in about 2 weeks as we go through Judges. Samson. You know his hair-raising story. Samson? He's in the hall of faith? I mean, Gideon and Barak and Samson? With all of his shortcomings, with all of his failings, Samson? He would be one of the handful that would be singled out by the Spirit of the Lord to be recorded in this section as a hero, an example of faith. Gideon, Barak, Samson. Samson. And then Jephthah, the next guy mentioned. He was the one, as we'll see in a week or two in Judges, again, as we're going through the stories of these interesting men. Jephthah was the guy that was battling against the enemies of Israel and said, oh God, if you give us victory, I'll sacrifice the first thing I see when I get back home again. And he no doubt was thinking, I'm going to see a cow, a bull, a ram, a lamb, and I'll sacrifice that cow or that bull or that ram or that lamb. But if you know the story, and we'll look at it carefully, what came out of his tent when he made his way back into the home front after his victory that day wasn't a cow or a bull, a ram or a lamb, but it was his daughter. He wasn't counting on that. And she would be sacrificed in a way that, well, we'll study in a few weeks. Stay tuned. We'll talk about that at a later time. But I would say, what an interesting listing of people. Jephthah, the guy that sacrificed his daughter. Samson, the guy who was unstable in so much of his ministry. Such a up and down personal history. Barak, he seems to me to be kind of cowardly. Gideon, with all of his wanderings and ups and downs, trying to really get his courage up to do what he was supposed to. And then, when Gideon's life comes to an end, as we saw last Wednesday, after he was granted a glorious victory over the Midianites, you know, he makes this golden ephod, this golden vest that only the high priest was to wear. And the people begin to worship this golden vest that Gideon makes. And he multiplies wives unto himself. And he has 70 sons and all the rest. And I would say, man, what a mess. But you see, God looks at things differently. God says, these are giants in my estimation. Why? Because, listen carefully. When you read the story of Gideon, or when you read the account of Barak, or when you look at the life of Samson, or think through the story of Jephthah, or David, or any of the men that are listed in this chapter, what you have to say is, Lord, for these guys to be in this hall of faith is an indication of one thing, your grace, your kindness, your generosity, and incredible mercy. And as I read the life of Gideon, and as we studied it through, the conclusion that I come to is, Lord, it's just plain old, flat out, downright you. It's not Gideon being this great guy, although we see some fine qualities in him. But we also see failings and foibles and fickleness and foolishness, and yet you used him. You used an ordinary guy, a guy a lot like me. You used him in an extraordinary way, to a glorious degree. And here's what I want you to be aware of today. Listen carefully. This is the message of the Bible. This is the message of our Lord to us this day and every day. It's grace. Grace that Gideon was used like he was. Not because of who he was, but in spite of him, really. It's grace that he is enshrined in the hall of faith. When you read his story like we've done, the only conclusion to which you can come is, man, God is gracious. Here's a guy that was full of doubt and fickleness and multiplying wives and unintentionally perhaps, but nonetheless doing something he shouldn't have done, making a golden vest that became a snare to his countrymen. Lord, you're so gracious. And gang, this is how you can know. Any thought that you have, any book that you read, any sermon that you hear, any conversation that you share, you will know the source of that thought, that book, that sermon, or that conversation. Listen to me. You will be able to authenticate the source. You will be able to discern the source by this one simple rule of thumb. I'm going to give you a rule of thumb by which you can know when you hear a sermon, or have a thought, or read a book, or share a conversation. You can know, is this really of the Lord, or is it from somewhere else, or someone else? You can know by a very simple rule of thumb, and this is it. To whom goes the glory? Or what gets the glory? I have heard sermons and read books on faith that cause me to marvel at men who exercised extraordinary faith. And frankly, I have gone through periods in my own walk where I thought, that's the key. If I could just be a man of faith. And I began to emphasize faith and focus on faith in a way that ultimately I found myself putting my faith in faith. And faith received the glory. And a man who exercised faith was held up and exalted. And it's a concept, or it's a person who receives the applause and the approval and the glory. Hey, that is not the way it's supposed to be. I am not to have faith in faith. I'm to have faith in the goodness and grace of God. Not in my ability to somehow get it together and exercise to some great degree this measure of faith. I have heard messages on prayer. I have read books on prayer. I've shared conversations about prayer in which the emphasis was prayer. Man, if we could just have more prayer meetings and pray longer and press in with greater fervency. But ultimately, prayer gets the glory, and people who pray begin to give lectures or write books or do videos on their finding the key, and prayer is the key. No, it's not. It's not faith. It's not prayer. I have read books and had conversations about discipline. How there are men that rise up at 4 a.m. every day in a disciplined kind of way and spend 3 hours in prayer and 2 hours in Bible study every day. Unless it's a real busy day, then they get up at 3. And I go, wow, awesome. What an awesome guy. And I've tried that from time to time personally. And when I succeeded and when I excelled, I found myself glorifying discipline and wishing that others could have the discipline that I have, you see. But then when I failed, as I would inevitably do, after about 2 days or maybe three, I would feel so bad, I would still quote the great authors or the great sermons or whatever on getting up at 3 a.m. or whatever it might be. But me, my oh my, I just found myself despairing because of my own weakness and inconsistency. Now listen to me, this is really important. This is a rule of thumb that you need to get down and really be familiar with. When you read a book, a biography, a book on theology, whatever it might be, you hear a sermon, you have a thought, you share a conversation, who gets the glory? Is it some person or some aspect of spiritual life? Or is it, to God be the glory, great things he has done? We boast not of ourselves. Paul said, I glory in nothing but the cross of Jesus Christ, what he did for me, because I was in desperate need and will continue to be of forgiveness and mercy perpetually. Listen to what Paul says. Just jot these down. I'll read them to you. God, from 1 Corinthians chapter 1, verse 27, has chosen the foolish things of the world to confound the wise. How many of you today would say, frankly, Pastor John, if I was to be really, totally transparent and honest, I'm a pretty foolish person. Would you raise your hand? Okay, you're the qualified ones. Not the guys that say, oh man, I've studied hard, I've earned these degrees, I've got it down because of my great intellectual capabilities. God, who uses the foolish things of the wise, or of the world, pardon me, to confound the wise, and God, he's chosen the weak things of the world to confound the things which are mighty, that no flesh should glory in his presence. According as it is written, he that glories, let him glory, what gang? In the Lord. That's the only thing we ought to glory in. Not, man, I found the real key. If we could just pray for 3 hours a day, or if you can fast twice a week, or if you can memorize a chapter a month, or if you come to 6 studies a day, or whatever it might be. We are to glory in one thing and in one thing only, the Lord.
That is so simple and so right. It is easy to get caught up in glorifying other things, prayer, discipline, faith, etc. But none of these are the key. The key is God's grace, and we will know if something is from God's grace by whether or not God gets the glory. Pastor John has more to say on this important truth on our next program. Please be sure to join us then.
This teaching is also available on the Searchlight website at johncorson.com. You will also find on the website Pastor John's books and other Bible study resources. Again, the address of the website is johncorson.com.
The Searchlight radio program is available as a podcast. This means that you can download the program to your mobile phone, computer, tablet, or other mobile device and listen to it at your convenience. For complete information, please check out the podcast page on the Searchlight website at johncorson.com.
Searchlight is a listener-supported ministry. We appreciate your prayers and support. May the Lord richly bless you.